My name is Robin Hughes Palmas, and I am the PMO for the Division of Healthcare and Quality Promotion. And our first speaker for this afternoon is Dr. John Iskander. Dr. John Iskander, MD and PH, joined CDC in 2000, serving as project officer and later team lead for the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, before being named in 2006 as the Associate Director for Science in CDC's Immunization Safety Office. During 2007 to 2008, Dr. Iskander served as Acting Director of ISO. A commander in the U.S. Public Health Service, PHS, Iskander has field experience responding to anthrax and monkeypox cases. He has received the Outstanding Service Medal, Commendation Medal, and PHS Citation for his work in vaccine safety. He earned his medical degree and a public health master's degree from Tulane University. He served as a pediatrician in Albany, Georgia, with the National Health Services Corp from 1995 to 98, and as a medical epidemiologist from 1998 to 2000 for the South Carolina Department of Health. He drafted the state's first pandemic influenza plan and has been active in national pandemic planning efforts since 1999. Dr. Iskander is a steering committee member of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. He has authored more than 40 scientific publications on vaccine safety and continues to practice pediatrics on a part-time basis. He presently lives in Atlanta with a wife and two children. At this time, let's welcome Dr. John Iskander.
Thank you very much, Robin. I just wanted to take this opportunity to actually to publicly thank Robin for her work as a management official with the Immunization Safety Office. She came to us in 2007 at a time when we were in desperate need, and she provided some great senior leadership and guidance, and I just wanted to publicly acknowledge that. So what I'm here to talk to you today is a pilot surveillance project for influenza vaccine safety. I'm going to use some terminology which isn't necessarily reflected on the slide, and this is sort of user-generated active surveillance. You can think of this as vaccine safety surveillance for the Twitter and Facebook generation. So the background here is that in the event of having to deploy a pre-pandemic or pandemic vaccine, it's likely that that's not a vaccine that's going to have been tested in thousands of people before it's used. If we're lucky, perhaps it may have been tested in 100 or perhaps at most a few hundred people. So if we think of a setting where we want to administer a vaccine to healthcare workers or to responders, it might be helpful to accumulate more safety data as we go along rather than not have as much as we would like when we start having to then ramp up to giving the vaccine to thousands, hundreds of thousands, or ultimately millions. So I'm going to show you some results today from a pilot study looking at this user-generated active surveillance system, give you some information about the kind of data we got, but also about how acceptable it was to users, and talk a little bit about, you know, what directions we would like to take this work in the future. I do want to acknowledge that the bulk of this work was done by under the supervision of my colleague, Dr. Nelson Arboleda, who was unable to be here today, but really it's his vision and leadership on this project that I'm representing here today. So the results I'll be showing you today are of a pilot study conducted during the 2007-2008 influenza season, four different managed care organization clinics in three East Coast sites, served as recruitment centers, and folks were recruited and asked to provide follow-up information by an interactive voice response telephone system, press 1 for, press 2 for, or by internet or by cell phone. Follow-up calls were made to folks who hadn't responded within a certain designated time period. And then these results of this real-time user-generated active surveillance were available to those conducting the study on a secure website. This just shows geographically where the participating sites were, again, roughly north, south, east, and west of Washington, D.C. And this is an example of the recruitment materials that were used. Again, this all went through the IRB approval process, and so people could choose to get the flu vaccine and not enroll, or they could choose to get their flu vaccine and also enroll in this research study. So again, this shows you sort of the flow of the system going from recruitment to data. It's described here as data collection, but again, this is actually, folks are essentially inputting their own self-report of symptoms. Unlike traditional active surveillance, where we as the public health system go out and seek that data or electronically capture that data, here, if you will, the data's coming to us. And then, of course, once that data comes in, it's available for both near real-time review as well as more in-depth analytic analysis. Again, this is just a schematic of the study flow and design. And again, examples of some of the materials. Now, this is a material that would have been given to someone once they'd been recruited and signed the informed consent, information about their enrollment, information about how to check in by either phone or website, and also additional guidance about what they should do if they felt they were having any sort of severe reaction or problem following vaccination. So here what we see is essentially the number of folks that were willing to participate. So about 80% of those in these four sites agreed to enroll themselves in this study. Again, relatively small pilot testing of this to begin with. And again, clearly there might be some differences here between people willing to participate in such a study and people who would opt just to get their vaccine and be left alone. Again, now we're looking here at folks in terms of their reporting. And so we note that folks are reporting in within the first several days, generally. So now we're looking at, of those 80% who agreed to participate, about a similar proportion, again, about 80% of those participated in the system in terms of submitting data. And again, certainly there might be differences between those who would enroll and submit data and those who would enroll and just kind of blow it off at that point. So again, about 80% of the people who enrolled actively submitted their information online. Most people participated for up to about 3 days post vaccination, and surprisingly to us, actually, about 10% of people, followed through with reporting symptoms daily for 7 days. And just need to clarify, reporting symptoms can include, I'm still fine today and there's no problem. day, you know, what the polio surveillance people would call zero reporting. And again, people did take advantage of the fact that there was more than one way to report. So again, how did people report? People used phone or interactive voice response about 40% of the time, internet about 20% of the time. The CATI is a call back mechanism, and so again, of those folks that participated, about 20 to 30% needed a prompt, and so the remainder were folks who even with a prompt didn't participate. So again, you see that you have a little bit of dropout of this at every level. But if you compare this, for example, to the effort involved in, say, enrolling 200 people or a similar number of people in a clinical trial, this is actually much, much less effort and was able to be set up in a much shorter period of time. So again, this the focus on this slide is not really on the data. This just gives an example of what the data would look like as it's coming in, or one of the ways it might look like as you're coming into analysis. And again, the ability as the sort of frontline public health person to be able to generate different types of reports from a secure website on your desktop, so that you know, when the policy person calls and says, well, what is the status of the safety of the 100 people we gave this vaccine to on Tuesday, you can say, well, 80 people have called us, and 78% of them, you know, 78 of those 80 people said, they're just fine, thank you. So this just gives you an idea of some of the specific types of adverse events people were asked to report: aches, fever, redness, soreness, swelling. What we would see here is sort of what we would expect: a few, about 18% reporting some aches, 56% reporting some soreness at the injection site. One thing that sort of attracted a little bit of our attention is the 6% reporting unusual weakness. And again, I think this points out a couple of things. One is the ability to look at things rather early and say, well, here's something we need to follow, because you'll notice if that proportion kind of waxes and wanes over the next several days, but by day four, you know, it's down to basically 0% reporting that. So it can alert you to issues that you might need to follow closely a little bit earlier. It also points out a limitation in that since this is user generated, everybody, you know, that unusual weakness probably simply means, you know, I may be feeling just a little tired or a little run down today, rather than, gee, I can't move my leg. So there is a subjective component that is built into this, that is part of the cost of this system. One might imagine, for example, if you targeted healthcare providers, you know, in a first wave of a pandemic vaccination program, that might be some way to perhaps compensate for this drawback of the system a little bit, that they might be a little more inclined to give you a little more meaningful data. And again, the ability to follow things longitudinally over time, so that you can know, 87% of people are reporting some symptom, but you know, the symptoms they're reporting are mild, and then being able to see that sort of wax and wane. Remember that the denominator on each day of people reporting is changing, so it's not the same people reporting every day. So the longitudinal follow-up has to be cautiously interpreted in light of different populations reporting on different days. And again, here, the ability to follow so-called severe reactions, and you can see that while 13% of people are reporting those on the first day, by on the day of vaccination, by the day following it, that's dropped down, and again, subject to the limitations of people are sort of self-defining and self-classifying their own symptoms. Here now we see that this is actually analysis for a specific lot of vaccine, and one could certainly imagine a situation during pre-pandemic vaccination where different lots are being used in different vaccination clinics, and one would want to be able to have information to compare between Clinic A and Clinic B about the safety profile being seen. And here again is ability to look at different lots used in different locations, and again try to compare. Interestingly, even with all the limitations I've described so far, here we see there's essentially no difference in the safety profile of these several lots here, and that's of course in line with what we would expect given the stringent pre-release lot testing and other regulatory safeguards we have in place. But in vaccine safety, it is often better to have data to back up sort of an assertion about the stringency of lot testing rather than just say, trust us, all the lots are the same and they're all safe. So again, just looking at, different, no severe reactions by lot, no grouping of severe reactions by lot. Obviously, different folks receiving different lots in different clinics, and so of course, with a relatively small pilot study here, we were more looking really for proof of concept. We would never, if we thought there was a concern with a particular lot, we would not use this as a basis to bringing this concern to FDA. Okay, so again. Mainly the thing I'd like to illustrate by this slide is just the ability to, again, break data down by which clinic they received their vaccine in, by race, ethnicity, education. Obviously, with a relatively small pilot study, the ability to get meaningful sub-analyses from all of these might be limited, but again, with a somewhat a larger clinic population, you're likely to be able to get some better data about that. So again, we feel like this actually was a good pilot test for, user-generated active surveillance of people receiving influenza vaccination in a routine primary care kind of setting. We didn't quite meet our full recruitment target, which was really because we were starting late in the season. We were not enrolling people until November, and that may have had some. So we may have had some competing priorities in people rather than signing up for research studies. So what we're going to try to do as we move on with this work is try to recruit people earlier. Obviously, we had a very limited geographic test setting. We had very limited diversity in terms of practice settings. And so I think we would want to know, how does this work in a public health clinic setting, a private physician office, other places where we might want to get relatively rapid safety data on sort of a key group of vaccinated people. And again, the main data we have to judge the acceptability of this method at this point is the various participation rates. So the roughly 80% willing to enroll and the 80% of those who participated in submitting data. Obviously, another approach would be to directly ask people what they did and didn't like about the system. Obviously, there are other communication modalities that could be added to this. more of an interactive way of not just receiving the data, but also sharing outcoming educational methods. I think there's been some very good work in the developing world on using text messages for various types of social marketing campaigns. And obviously, we want to make sure that any serious reactions are reported to the VAERS system and appropriately managed, or the appropriate public health response is met. So I think we actually have here, again, what we have is, again, a tool to track the status of vaccinees. Dr. Arboleda actually came up with this kind of insight, which is this tells people that it's not just, here's your vaccine, now go away and please don't bother us. But it's a way to provide people some reassurance that their health status after they are vaccinated is being followed and is important to someone other than just the person themselves. And again, should there be any serious problems, the ability to more rapidly pick those up potentially compared to, say, reporting delays that might be encountered with VAERS. So again, the ability to get broader data, to get sort of positive data with a numerator and a denominator. So I think most of us would much rather say 95% of the people we vaccinated are reporting no problems, as opposed to one person told us that they're having a serious problem. Clearly, the former is a much better lead, if you think about it. So again, what we're going to be looking to in the future is potentially for some state or local health department pilot sites to be able to look at the adaptability in different settings. And I think we will probably actually not take questions now, but I think we'll actually defer them to after Dr. Daly's talk. Thank you.